I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 20 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again in order to finish off week number 4 is Nick Rehack of the Rabbit Hole Podcasts. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you for having me back. It's weird to think that it's already the end of the week, and that we've gone through so much already.
That is true. That is true. But hopefully you'll be back in subsequent seasons, you know. So
I will be, but you never know.
That's true. That's true. I'll have to try and think of movies that you've never seen.
Yeah. There you go. You've been nailing it so far. So
that's right. I know. Minute 20 begins with Peter getting in the last word and ends with Violet showing up. So yesterday we were finishing up the conversation between George and Peter, and you know, George makes a decision that he's actually going to go to the party, and he starts standing up, and as he's standing up, this minute begins, and Peter then says, "Have a good time, son." You know, this is unfortunately the last time we're going to hear from Peter in this movie, but you know, this week proves how great of a character he is.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah. And then they have a very nice wipe, you know, changing the scene. And then we can see like a banner that says Bedford Falls High School, class of 1928. So once again, they're reminding us that we are in 1928. So once again, George is still 21 at this point, and Harry is 2 years his junior. We see an orchestra playing. You know, you can see some of the members of the orchestra. I mean, they really went out to have a very big type of party here, to a graduation party, or maybe it's the prom or something like that. Not really sure how would you call it, but you know.
Yeah, I would think a prom or some kind of homecoming dance. Either way, a lot of people, a lot of dancing and pie.
Yes. Well, only 3 pies that we know.
That's true.
You know, you gotta wait around to see all the pies. You know, so I mean, I actually was thinking about the fact. I mean, you know, if this is a prom, so what is the definition of the term prom? Like, where does it come from?
I would assume it comes from prom, as in like promenade or some type of just display, where people are kind of coming out and here's all these dresses and gowns. And then eventually I think the dancing and that thing sort of came into it. But I think it was more of just a very formal like presentation of.
So, I mean, the term promenade, if you think basically is, I mean, I've never even thought about it before as to what it actually, where it comes from. Mm-hmm. You know, because you know, you just think of it as okay, it's the prom.
Yeah, it's become its own thing. It's its own, you know, word in its own world too.
Yes, you were correct. It is called a promenade dance. Okay, which which is referred to as the prom. So it's a dance party for high school students. It's usually semi-formal black tie or informal suits and evening gowns for girls. It's typically held at the end of the school year. Sometimes they would have separate proms. Some places have separate proms for 11th and 12th grades. Sometimes they can be combined together. Usually you have, you know, voting, and they have a prom king and a prom queen. Mm-hmm. What's known as a prom court, you know, with those are the ideas of the queen and princess and king and prince and everyone works around that, in order to give them crowns and things like that. Sometimes
Yep.
sashes. The history of it. When do you think they started doing these type of official proms?
I would say best so far back as to like the early 1900s, like 1910, 1911, somewhere after post World War I. So let's say 1920.
Okay, it goes back even further than that. The earliest recording of an official, dance called a prom was in 1894,
Okay.
where Amherst College and Smith College for Women had a gathering between the students of both colleges.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and basically, they only started really recording them when they started having yearbooks, right? So when do you think they started with the yearbooks?
So the yearbook,
Because then obviously
I'll
they had
stick with nine.
documentation. That's the whole thing. Once you had the yearbooks, then you had more documentation. So you had pictures and stuff like that.
And stories and articles. I would say 1920. I'll stick with 1920.
Right. Okay. Well, the okay. So again, you're close. It started in the early 30s.
Okay.
And the idea of using the word prom or promenade was just a fancy description in order to talk about this regular type of junior or senior class dance. And that's how it started out. And then it turned into something that had a much larger than life meaning for high school students themselves by the
That
way
is
that they were
true. I
doing it.
remember, yeah, I can remember in high school being like, it's the most important thing ever is to have a date to prom. I mean,
Right.
obviously now in life, way more important things, but I can remember like it being like the thing. And I was so nervous too.
Oh, well. And in the 50s, when people started making more money and things like that, so they started making the prom more extravagant and elaborate. Something similar to what we are used to seeing today in movies and things like that.
Yep.
And it basically ended up becoming the pinnacle event of any high school student's social life, whether you go to the prom or you're asked to the prom or things like that.
Yeah, and
So,
now it's even gotten even more elaborate with, you see these videos online of like, people asking other or students asking other students to prom and how big those gestures have gotten and how it's like really just becoming a bigger and bigger thing.
yeah. And it's also they've changed it. It's no longer the idea of people coming as couples. Nowadays people go in groups, or everyone goes individually, or whatever it is. It's not as much of a status symbol that you need to make sure you have a prom date, that type of thing.
We were kind of on that cusp. I had a date because I had a girlfriend at the time, thankfully, but a group of us went at the same time. So even though we like everybody was kind of it was I think 10 or 12 of us. So we each had our own like a certain date, sure, but we were all at like the same table. We were all like in the same vicinity, dancing and stuff like that. So I think we were right on that cusp of it becoming more of a group activity,
Right.
which is
Okay.
fun. And that's what it should be. Like you should just be celebrating with your best friends at the time.
Right. Makes sense. And an interesting tidbit is that Susan Ford, the daughter of Gerald Ford, in 1975, she became the first president's daughter to actually have her prom in the White House. They did it in the East Room of the White House.
I bet that was wild.
Yeah. Yeah, especially with all the Secret Service guys hanging out.
Oh yeah, just being very careful.
Exactly. And we thought Harry, wants to get a little bit of gin in here. I don't know about
Yeah.
that. And don't forget, this was the mid-70s. So, they it might have been a very interesting party to have in the White House.
I imagine so.
Yeah. And so back to the scene, we have the orchestra and the band playing, and then we see Harry, George, and a few of the friends are partying, and as they're walking through, they're carrying a lot of like dishes, Did you by any chance see how many dishes he ended up taking? Remember, at the beginning of the week, we were talking about the fact that, he was trying to convince his mother to let him take dishes to the prom, right? Or
Right.
to the dance, right? So I actually took the time to count how many dishes he's holding there. What would be your guess?
I didn't even see the dishes. I just saw the initial pies that
No,
were
so
being
George is
carried in.
carrying the pies, but Harry
Right.
is holding a stack of plates. Some are larger, some are smaller. If
I'll
you
have to
go
go
back,
back.
if you go to
I don't remember
second
that part. I'll have to
five,
go look.
you can look in second five of this minute and you'll be able to see that.
Okay, I'll have to go and look and do that. Oh gosh. I guess I'll just maybe he got two dozen, like 24.
You're off by one. There are 25. Which is great because he did say to his mother he needs a couple dozen. That
Yeah,
was
that's true.
the actual thing of what he said. So he apparently, was able to get a couple dozen and, just happened to grab one more.
He got him, and that's what
That's right.
matters.
One for good luck. But what's really interesting is you see how crowded this room is. We were talking the other day about how Bedford Falls is a relatively small, it seems like a small community, but they have a lot of people in this graduating class.
It's like a lot now that you mentioned, the size of the town and kind of what we discussed throughout the week. There is a handful, and not only that, but there's like a band and there's like people up top kind of watching over and everything. Like it's truly like the whole town is out for this, seemingly, but it's just the young people of the town.
Right. That's right. And then, as George is walking through the crowd, he goes, "Excuse me." And then someone screams, "There you are." And then we have someone say, "George, hello." A lot of people are talking and stuff. Here, George is only carrying two pies. So I don't know. Maybe they ate the third pie on the way. I don't know.
Could be,
But
could be.
what I find even more interesting is why is George carrying the pies? Because if Harry left earlier, and let's say George only leaves 5, 10 minutes later. Harry's already inside. He wasn't sitting and waiting outside for George to show up to help him carry in the pies.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Why would he be carrying pies?
Unless he took other pies.
And we didn't see him. It's possible.
No, but actually, I wouldn't think that because now that I'm not, when I think about it, it makes more sense that. That Harry already brought the pies because, if they would have made X number of pies or whatever it is, I mean, we know at least three. The idea was that George wasn't going to be going, so why would they have more pies at home for him to take? So maybe he just happened to catch Harry still outside, when he's unloading the car or whatever it is, and he's like, "Hey, I'll help you, I'll take those pies. Let me take those pies off
Could
your
be.
hand."
Yeah. See, if I say that, very different conversation because the pie, not making it to the table. I'm taking it right home. I love
Well, it
pie.
depends on what kind. I mean, do you have a preference?
Not really. I mean, well, I'm huge pecan pie kind of guy, but I pie in general, I'm a fan.
Okay. See, for me, it's either apple or blueberry. Those are the only ones I'll touch.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And you can't tell what type of pies these are. Yeah, they never mention it. We just know they're pies.
I'm going to assume apple, but we do not know.
No, but maybe they made one this way and one that way. You need a little bit of variety. You can't just have everything. You can't just say, "Oh, I'm gonna bring three apple." He's in charge of the Eats Committee. He can't bring just three apple pies. He's got to bring, one apple pie, one pecan pie, and one cherry pie. I don't know.
That's true. That's true. There has to be, yeah. Yeah, he's got to mix it up a little bit. Okay.
We don't know what the official pie of Bedford Falls is.
Somebody's got to know. I'm sure it's somewhere like buried in the notes of, the filmmakers or somewhere in the script. There's got to be something that tells us.
The script does not say. I mean, I do have a copy of the script. The script doesn't say that. Doesn't tell us, what kind of pies they are. It
Huh.
says it does say
Okay.
that he's carrying pies, but it doesn't say, what kind of pies they are. which actually would be interesting. It would be, you know, an added information that they don't necessarily need. You know, but let me just look quickly through here and see if it says it. Oh, just says Harry carrying pies in each hand and balancing one in his head. He doesn't say what kind of pie it is. And then when they get to the party itself, it just says he and Harry are carrying plates and pies. That's all it says.
Okay. All right.
Doesn't mention what kind it is.
One day we'll find out.
They want to just leave it to our imagination to try and figure out what kind of pie.
Well, I like your reason. It is.
Well, you know, it's all supposition, so why not?
Yeah.
And you know, as they're walking through, so there's a bit of a conversation going on between different people, and then Harry introduces George to somebody and says, "You know my kid brother George, I'm gonna put him through college." Which is a little ironic because that is what he's theoretically doing. Because if Harry needs to go work in the building and loan right now, so therefore that does mean that the money that he's earning there is what's going to be paying for, you know, I guess part of George's tuition.
That is true. Yeah. Yeah. Especially because somebody has to take the place and kind of, you know, help make money, and it's him. So that is one way to spin it for sure.
That's right. And I think also Harry is he seems like he's the most popular kid in the class. You know, he's running the show. He's the man of the hour, as I guess you would say.
He's for sure running the eats committee. That's
right. That we know. That is true. And then someone else shows up and goes, "Hello, George." And he goes, "Hee-haw." And then George looks at him and goes, "Oh, Sam Wainwright, how are you? When did you get here?" "Oh, this afternoon, I thought I'd give the kids a treat. Old college graduate now." "Yep, old Joe College Wainwright, they call me." So it's actually very funny. I mean, we obviously saw Sam at the, you know, in the first scene of, or one of the first scenes of the movie, you know, when they're playing on the ice, because you had them all doing the hee-haws. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so it's taking us back to that they're still, you know, talking about they're still using that same calling card, I guess you can say. You know, even though it's 10 years later, you know, they're always going with the hee-haws.
Which I really like that. I I have a lot of inside jokes with friends that are, she's coming on 20 years now, and it's nice to just pull it out every so often and see if they remember it too. Like, it's just this nice bonding thing, no matter how goofy it is. And right. It's not like it's hurtful either. Like, it's just fun and harmless, goofy little, you know, moose thing. And then
that's right.
I like it.
Now, I mean, his name is Sam Wainwright. Do you know what a Wainwright is?
Ooh, I want to say singer, but that's only because of like Rufus Wainwright and Loudon Wainwright. I'm going to stick with singer, even though I don't think it's correct.
No, it is not correct. And the truth is, I had totally forgotten what it means. And then when I looked it up, it reminded me that I am familiar with it. A Wainwright is also known as a Cartwright. Okay. And it is the trade, the person skilled in the making and repairing of wagons and carts.
Huh.
Okay, a wain is a large wagon that was used for farm use, and a wright means someone who's a worker.
Who makes right. Okay.
That's right. And, you know, a wainwright, it could be someone who will employ different types of craftsmen, including wheelwrights, blacksmith, painters, stuff like that.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, and it's also a last name that has that goes back very, very far. It goes back to 1237 in Essex.
Whoa, that is
yeah
far back. I was mm-hmm. not expecting that old.
Yeah. I mean, I only know, could think of one Wainwright besides Sam Wainwright was Adam Wainwright, who was a pitcher for the Cardinals. You know, just
Oh,
I used to have him on my fantasy football, fantasy baseball league, and I remember
yeah.
I one time picked him, and then he blew out his arm in spring training. I was not happy that year
I would imagine so.
because
Oh,
they wouldn't let me get rid of him, so simply.
that's lame.
Yeah, but what can you do? Yeah, but none of the other Wainwrights that I looked up are really. I wasn't familiar with any of them.
Okay.
And then, he continues his conversation with Sam, and then Sam looks at him, and looks at George, and goes, "Well, freshman, looks like you're gonna make it after all, huh?" So, it got me thinking, where did the terms, for freshman and sophomore and junior and senior, like where does all this come from? Do you have any idea?
You know what? I was curious about this myself last year. A couple coworkers, their kids were graduating, moving on from middle school into high school, and I was thinking, like, we were talking about the names and how we have them, and I remember reading the Wikipedia article about it, and but I have done zero retention whatsoever. If I had to think, I would assume it dates back to like olden times with monasteries and different levels of teaching. I feel like that's way off base, so I'm just going to go with not 100% sure. Please enlighten me.
Okay, well, first of all, you are very correct that it is an old term. It goes back very far. A freshman, it dates all the way back to the 1590s.
Wow, okay.
Okay, where it means either a newcomer or a novice. So it makes
Okay.
sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. A freshman. Yeah.
That's right. You're a freshman. You're just, showing up and that. So then you have a sophomore. Where do you think that comes from, and what do you think it means?
I would say it's a weird kind of backwards way of saying like they understand what's going on. There's a sophistication there. So like it, they're more sophisticated than what a freshman would be.
Okay, that makes sense because I mean the word sophos is a Greek term for wise, but moros is a Greek term for foolish or dull. So it basically was used as a joke where they would call them wise morons.
I'm gonna start using that now. I
That's
like that. A wise moron.
it.
I like that a lot.
And it th that goes back to the mid 1600s, and it basically meant, it could have been. The idea that someone who's arguing, someone who's smarter than just being there the first time, but they're still not there yet. They're on their way. Right. So, okay, moving along to junior. Where do you think that one comes from?
Junior, I would assume that just, they just kind of know what's happening. They get it. I would say it's weird because when you hear junior, you think of like someone's name. Like if you know what I mean, like Nick, and then passing on the name, to a Nick Jr. or Nick the third, that kind of thing. So I would say not quite a senior, so they would go with junior. I think that's it. It's just kind of based off of like names and things. So they're like, oh, you're not quite a senior, you're the junior. You're almost there.
You are completely right. It basically means, yeah, you got it again, Nick. It basically means the younger of the two. So, they're
Okay.
looking at a junior and senior because they so the term junior goes all the way back to the 13th century.
Whoa. Okay.
You're right.
That's
And
catching me off guard because I wouldn't think it predates, well, junior in a sense of naming someone, so never mind. Never
right.
mind. That makes sense.
Okay. I mean, I couldn't tell you when they started using it to talk about, someone in their third year of college or in 11th grade or whatever it is. But the idea is that, they're not there. They're not at the point of being an upperclassman. You know, that's what it comes down to. So they're the junior between the two. And then obviously you have the senior ever since 1741. That's basically, it's meant a fourth year student, a fourth year student, you know, an advanced student, you know, someone who is, you know, he's a senior. So he's one step above the others. And then I found a whole bunch of interesting facts about high school and different things like that. What do you think the dropout rate is high school?
Currently?
Yeah.
Let's see. My senior class was 220. We're down to 180. I would say it's a 23% dropout rate.
7%. That's it.
Wow. Okay. I am not as optimistic.
But you have to realize you have to take all of the, you know, it's not just where Nick studied. You know, it's every.
That's true.
It's from all over the place. So.
That's true. It can't always be about me.
That's right. It can, but this particular thing is not. Okay, how many freshmen do you think there are in a given year? Obviously, in general, in colleges, in the U.S.
Colleges. Okay, so if we remember our conversation, we know there's about 5,100. And if we're multiplying by, let's go with, but then you got those also massive universities with thousands and thousands of people. Let's say there's 352,000.
4.3 million. So
you're off by 4 million.
That's right. You're in the ballpark. But
I got the 0.3 at least. That is wild. I was not expecting such a big number.
Yeah.
That's great, though. That is great.
Yes. Now, how much money do you think college students owe in student loans?
It's got to be in the trillions. Let's go with 4.3 trillion.
According to the data I've here, it's 1.08 trillion. But that's still a lot.
That's still so much.
Mm-hmm. So much. And that 40% of all the students who have to pay back student loans owe more than $10,000.
Mm.
And in 40% of households headed by anyone 34 and under still owe student debt. Yeah.
That's a bummer. I mean, and I hate to just, you know, reduce it to just it being a bummer, but it's a bummer. That's just it. Man, that stinks.
But unfortunately, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, I love the way that Sam basically says, you know, that I thought I'd give the kids a treat, you know, and the idea being, you know, that he graduated, let's say 2 years ago or 4 years ago, whatever it is, you know, so he wants to treat them that they get to see, you know, Sam Wainwright show up.
Yeah. My presence is a present.
Yeah. But I think it comes from the fact that, you know, I mean, I remember after I graduated, it was always nice to go back and see, you know, friends of mine that were in earlier grades and show up, you know, because here I'm the graduate and I'm no longer there, you know, that type of thing. So like, you know, when you're visiting and stuff like that, you know, just to, you know, say hello to the old teachers and things like that. Same type of idea. So I think that's more or less what he's saying here.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. And then Sam, you know, gets closer to Harry and goes, well, Harry, you're actually the guy I want to see. He goes, hey, Sam. And he goes, Coach has heard all about you. He has? Yeah, he's followed every game and his mouth's watering. He wants me to find out if you're going to come along with us. Well, I got to make some dough first. Well, you better make it fast. We need great ends like you. And then he turns to George and goes, not broken down old guys like this one.
You know, because 2 year difference is the world's end over here.
Well, apparently.
This young spry guy 2 years later, old and broken down.
Yeah. Now, what I find really interesting is that, you know, they're sending Sam to be a recruiter, or, you know, they know that there's this kid in Bedford Falls who is a great football player. So, hey, we're going to send Sam to go there and convince him to come to our college or university or whatever.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
And what's
that's really slick.
What's the term? Boosters?
Yeah, boosters.
Is Sam a booster?
I wonder, I'm sure he is in some way.
I mean, because we know that, that he turned into a pretty good entrepreneur through the course of the movie. You know, so you'd think that he is the type of guy who will be, you know, paying back to his alma mater. You know, but then it made me think, if Harry is such a great player, wouldn't anyone try and offer him a scholarship? And if he got a scholarship, then he wouldn't have to worry about his father and mother and brother scraping together money in order to send him off to college.
Well, were scholarships a thing back then? Or I'm sure they were a thing, but where was it something that is more prevalent like it is today?
So it goes back even to the 1870s. They were providing financial support and incentives to athletes. And it was not uncommon at this time for non-students to participate in order to increase the success of a team. In 1895, they recruited a farm boy to play football at the University of Kansas.
That sounds about right.
In 1905, they created the NCAA in order to add regulation and supervision of college athletes throughout the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Likely story. Sounds like a front.
Right. And then the NCAA started dealing with the fact of student funding and alumni sponsorship. And this is already in the 30s that they're talking about this. So in 1928, it seems as if this is something that they did do at the time. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Maybe the college that Sam is in isn't one that's able to give scholarships. I don't know.
That's possible. I could see that for sure.
Yeah. Sam, you know, gives his little goodbye by saying yeehaw.
Yeah.
Moves along. And then someone else comes up to George, an older man, and he goes, George, welcome back. And he goes, hello, Mr. Partridge. How are you? So we can pretty much understand from this that he's the principal of the school. Yeah. So, you know, but it's funny, George, welcome back. George still lives in the town. He hasn't gone anywhere. You know, he must see him going to the grocery store or whatever it is.
Yeah, that is kind of weird that he would say welcome back and not like, oh, hey, pleasant, happy to see you here. You know, something like that.
That's right. And then he says something really strange to George, which we'll only completely understand next week. But he says putting a pool under this floor was a great idea. Saved us another building.
Yeah, that really threw me when I first heard that line. I was like, what?
And no, my question about that is he saying to George, this was your idea, George? It was a great idea? You know, is that what he's trying to emphasize here? That the idea was George's idea?
Could be. Because, and that could kind of hint, too, at the previous conversation with his father, how he's talking about he wants to build things and plan cities. And, I mean, yeah, you know, building a pool isn't the biggest, but it's a start.
Yeah, but I get the impression that George is not working in the, you know, working in that business yet.
Yeah, there is that too. Okay.
You know, I think he's only still, you know, dreaming of it, and he hasn't gone forth and, you know, built things, even in his little town of Bedford Falls. So I don't know. And I mean, again, it's a great way to foreshadow something that's going to happen next week.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know, without realizing at the time that this is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Mr. Partridge looks over at Harry and at Sam and he goes, Harry, Sam, have a lot of fun. There's lots of stuff here to eat and drink. And then he goes, and lots of pretty girls around too.
Everybody's just obsessed with these pretty girls, man.
That's right. they're trying to start a matchmaking service at the Bedford Falls High School dance party. You know.
And why is he telling them about the food? Harry knows he's on the eats committee. He would clearly know the food that's there.
That's right. But apparently, you know, he doesn't know that he's on the eats committee.
Oh, that's true. It could be so far delegated out that he just knows people are on it, but he doesn't know which people.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say that the principal knows, you know, who's on the eats committee.
That's true.
You know, he's just glad that there's a lot of good food. There's stuff to eat and drink and look at pretty girls, which could be a little suspicious if the, you know.
Yeah, it's a little borderline.
If the principal is saying that, but But he isn't referring to it to himself. He wants to help out the younger generation.
The youths.
That's right. The youths. As Vincent Gambini would say.
The youths.
Youths. What's a youth? And then the response that he gets from George is he basically says to him, "Oh, don't worry about the girls." And then we hear someone say a third dance, a third, and then we see Violet show up there. George says to her, "Hello, Violet." And she looks at him in a very seductive way. She goes, "Hello."
Flicking the old dance card around.
That's right. And that's how this minute will end. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into today's segment?
I like the dance card. I don't know what it is, but I like the concept back then of like, hey, I'm going to dance, and these are the people that I'm scheduled to dance with, and not just, you know, something organic and just kind of letting it happen. I don't know. I just, it makes me smile for some reason.
Okay. That's a good reason to smile. Yeah. All right. Great. So every Friday we have a segment called Oscar Oops. So as I mentioned before, this movie was nominated for Best Picture in 1946. It did not win, you know, but sometimes there are movies that when you look back and you say, how did they make that type of decision? Now, I'm a big fan of The Best Years of Our Lives. So, you know, it's hard for me to say which of the two I think is a better movie and better deserving of Best Picture. But, you know, over the 90 plus years that we've had the Oscars, there have been many controversial choices. And, you know, everyone has their opinion as to which movies they think should have won. What I decided to do was hear from all my guests their opinion on which five movies they think should have won the top Oscar. Obviously, the only caveat being that it must be one of the movies that was nominated that year for Best Picture. So, Nick, if you were a voter at the Oscars, what movies would you have voted for Best Picture that ended up not winning?
The first one that came to me, and as soon as I read this, I was like, "Ooh, I know! This is my number one with a bullet." Is 2007.
Number one. Wait, one second. Why are you going with the number one? You should be going with number five.
That's fair. I'll start at five. Yeah. I'm just so passionate about the number one.
Okay, so keep us in suspense just for a few more.
Well, starting at my number five, in 1964, My Fair Lady won the Oscar, and I feel like it should have went to Dr. Strangelove. Dr. Strangelove is so outrageously funny, and I know comedies don't really get a lot of love when it comes to the Academy Awards, especially you know, for acting awards. Some writing gets it, and every so often one will get a picture, but Dr. Strangelove is a phenomenal film, and I think it has such a grander and greater importance than what My Fair Lady does. And I feel like My Fair Lady is kind of like a safe pick, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. My number four is from 1994. I personally do not care for Forrest Gump, and I really like Pulp Fiction, so I think Pulp Fiction should have beat out Forrest Gump that year.
Okay.
My number three pick, 2002. I think that The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers is a superior film to Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. And I feel like Return of the King winning the Oscar was just an Oscar for like the entire trilogy that Peter Jackson put out.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel The Two Towers should have beaten out Chicago for Best Picture in 2002.
Yeah, there were a lot of movies that could have beaten out Chicago on that list. Yeah,
there's a whole lot of them. My number two pick in 2010, The King's Speech won. I do not like The King's Speech. I think it's a very boring, very basic, just bland film, and how it ever was nominated for so much is beyond me. I really feel like The Social Network should have won. I think that The Social Network, as of this recording, is Fincher's crowning achievement, is the best film he's done so far, and I don't think it was acknowledged as such. I think it should have just run the gambit and taken it all, but that's just me.
Okay.
And my number one, and I'm just passionate about it, in 2007, There Will Be Blood should have won Best Picture and beat out No Country for Old Men. I am a huge Paul Thomas Anderson fan. He's my favorite living director. I think the film is an absolute masterpiece. I think There Will Be Blood should be required viewing for anyone that considers themselves a film lover or cinephile or just any just fan of the moving pictures, artwork medium, just anything. I think There Will Be Blood should be a required viewing. It is such a masterwork of a film, and to see it lose to No Country for Old Men really irks me. Now, don't get me wrong. I've come around to No Country for Old Men. I enjoy the movie. I think it's good, but I don't think it holds a candle next to There Will Be Blood. I think There Will Be Blood is leagues ahead of what No Country for Old Men is.
Okay, that's fair.
And those are my five.
All right, great. So for one final time this season, would you like to tell people where they can find Nick Rehack?
For the last time this season, people can find me at Rabbit Hole Pod. On the music heavy podcast Lyrical Innuendo, or the Mystery Science Theater 3000 heavy program Play MST for me. You can also find me over on Instagram at That Rehack, and I'm over on Rehack Radio still. I'm trying to get back into the flow of things and get that up and running, so hopefully when you listen to this and you hear it and you go to search for it, I have some new episodes out.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Nick, this has been such a fun week having you back. So thank you very much for joining me. Thank you for taking the time to watch this new movie that you'd never seen before, and trusting me that I was giving you something good to take a look at.
I was expecting to enjoy the film because the last couple films that you've had me watch for your program, I've enjoyed, but I did not expect to just fall so in love with this film and to enjoy it as much as I did, and to it truly to become something that I'm going to watch every year for sure around Christmas time, but you know, maybe around other times as well. But I cannot thank you enough for having this be the film to talk about so I could finally sit down and watch it. So thank you. And for the conversation. I always enjoy being on the show and the conversations and everything you bring to it. I just absolutely enjoy it. So thank you for letting me come back and talk about this.
Always a pleasure. I love talking to you, Tony.
Thank you.
Always fun. Did you watch this movie by yourself, or did you watch it with anybody else?
I watched it by myself, but I want to change that. I think this is going to be one of those movies where I'm like, hey, have you seen? And then I find a way to get someone to come watch the film like with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're saying this isn't really something Bethany would be interested in seeing.
I think she is or would be because it's one of her mom's favorite films. So I think eventually she'll come around to see this. Maybe we'll watch it this Christmas. It'll be because every year, Thanksgiving Eve, we watch Muppet Christmas Carol, and then we'll watch it one or two more times before Christmas itself. So I feel like this will be a new one to throw in on the rotation as well.
Oh, okay. I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.